One of the things about values is that they are quite inconsistent. Now, when we look at inconsistent values in other people, we tend to say, hey, he's a hypocrite. And yet we ourselves have very inconsistent values. How do we manage to live with different kinds of values scattered through our minds and emotions? Well, Dr. McMurray tells a fascinating story about a young psychologist that he employed at one time. This young psychologist was born in a very small town in central Kansas. Now, the town he was born in was one of these religious sect towns. The entire town was controlled by this religious sect. They owned the school, they operated the stores, and all of the inhabitants of the town were members of this sect. And he spent the first 12 years of his life under this rigid sect. In fact, this sect had only one definition of sin. If it was fun, it was sin. When he was 12 years old, his father died. And his mother moved to Kansas City, and he went to a public high school. Now, he had to suddenly adopt a whole new series of values, didn't he? And then his mother remarried. And this time, she married a much more liberal man, a Methodist. So now again, he had to come up with an entirely new set of values. Now, this young guy was very, very bright, enormously intelligent man. And he was so brilliant as a high school student that he acquired a full scholarship in psychology to, of all places, the University of California at Berkeley. So now off goes our hero to Berkeley. And when he gets to Berkeley, his hero is a psychology professor who is a professing atheist and a wild leftist. Now, how does our hero manage to exist with these three totally different value bases in his skull? Well, we all have a protectionary device. I call it the logic-tight compartments of the mind. Now, what that means simply is this. If this young man were to go back to central Kansas, the doors would slam shut on the Kansas City and the Berkeley values. And the only values he would be aware of would be the small town sect values. If he went back to Berkeley, the doors would slam shut on the other two series, and the only values he'd be aware of would be the Berkeley values. Now, this is not at all unusual. We all have varying sets of values, which we apply to different situations. For example, I might invite you to one of those five martini luncheons, and I just might find out that along about the fourth martini, a different set of values would start floating to the surface. Or I might invite you to go with me to Las Vegas. And when we got there again, I just might find another series of values beginning to show up. We do not have consistent values. What do? We tend to bring out that group of values which are affected by the specific situation in which we find ourselves. Now, you have a series of values that you use during your working day. And you'll have another series of values that come to the forefront when you're at home with your family. And probably still another series of values that hit you as you walk into church on a Sunday morning. Varying values. Now, you have them. And so do the people that you're persuading. And many, many times, a salesman, for example, walks into anti-salesman values. that come to the fore only when they're facing a selling situation. Now, if you are a wise and professional persuader, you will understand that you cannot afford to create value conflicts. I found this, for example, quite often among electronic salesmen. They get involved with their own series of values when they're trying to sell. And they tend really to believe that the piece of equipment that they're offering is so good that if this person doesn't accept it, he isn't worthy of having it anyway. And endlessly, they'll lose sales because they're arguing over a scientific principle and they're not talking about a result. Because they're allowing a value conflict to come to the fore. So, many times, you are creating value conflicts simply because you are defending or proposing a belief of yours to a person you're trying to persuade. Now, another thing that creates value conflicts and lets you and I talk about it can be the length of your hair, or it can be your race, or your color. These things can and do create value conflicts. But the professional persuader, because he understands values, has no problem overcoming these on-site conflicts. Now, how do you, as a professional persuader, go about the process of avoiding value conflicts? Well, remember, if you will, that if you are doing the talking, you are expressing your values. Anyone who's doing the talking is expressing his values. Now, if those values that you're expressing while you're doing the talking do not relate to the values of the person you're talking to, you've had it. How do you avoid it? You don't do the talking. You ask questions and you allow him to do the talking. You see, if you're merely asking questions of him and he's doing the talking, the only values he's being confronted with are his own. And therefore, he can't get into an argument with his own values. And that's why the smart, sharp, aware salesman today doesn't go around telling people, he asks them. And another thing you tend to avoid is value conflict based on the clothes you wear. Endlessly, I'm being asked by people, how should I dress if I'm a professional persuader? And my answer is a very simple one. Dress like the people who your prospects go to for advice. Dress. Look like their lawyer. Look like their CPA. Look like their banker. And this doesn't restrict you very much these days because lawyers and bankers and advisors are pretty with it as far as clothing and hair are concerned today. But the image you need to create is the image of someone they go to for advice. And this way, you avoid value conflicts.
One thing I've learned over the years is just a real quick side note. And that is, since these messages were recorded, industries have developed what we call network marketing. All types of consumer-to-consumer products and services. And if you're in a business that recruits people to not only use the product or service, but to market it to their friends, their relatives, the people they work with, in that instance, your dress should never threaten the people that you're talking to. Meaning, If I were, let's say, wanting to have a football coach that is a friend of mine at the school that I used to teach at consider joining my network marketing organization, well, I certainly wouldn't walk in dressed in a business suit, looking like a lawyer, a doctor, or a professional. Why, I think I would threaten him at that point. I would wear clean, comfortable clothes that a football coach would wear. So here's a little idea. If you're in the business of recruiting people, dress the way the people will be dressing that you're going to visit, because they'll feel comfortable in your presence, and they'll want to do business with you because you are like them.
Well, I've said that you can alter or change values. How about it? How do you alter or change values? Well, first of all, you have to be aware of the fact that values are changing constantly anyway. Look at the changes that have taken place in the last 5 years in you, and realize that these same changes have taken place in the lifestyle and the thinking of the people that you're interested in persuading. Has your style of clothing changed in the last 5 years? Of course it has. How about your hairstyles? Has that changed in the last 5 years? Of course it has. And yet these are value expressions. Has there been a change in your political or economic philosophy in the last 5 years? Do you have beliefs now, concerns now, that you never had before? Are you aware of areas of impact that you were not aware of before? Do you believe in people today that you did not believe in yesterday? If any of these things are true, values have changed. Now, you, who are a persuader, have to be constantly aware of the mass changes of values. And how are you made aware of these mass changes in values? Well, this is apparent in your day-to-day conversation with people. It's covered in the media. These changes are always apparent. And remember, you, the persuader, have to be persuading within the framework of people's values, so you have to be aware of them. This is a constant study on the part of the professional. How are values changing? Now, one thing I think you need to understand is that you never can change a value by directly confronting it with logic. I don't know how many times you've tried this type of thing. And you, with your crystalline logic, have proved that the person you're talking to is absolutely and totally wrong. Has he now said, well, thank you very much, I'll change? Heck no. He said, I still believe what I believed as a matter of principle. Because if you take someone's values away from him, he's a ship without a rudder. He's lost his automatic steering mechanism. And he will not accept this. So you cannot confront him and change a value. Because when you confront him, you force him to defend his values, and his values therefore become even more firm. So how do you change values? Well, by using the system which created them in the first place. If these people are involved in a new punishment-reward situation, their values can be changed. You see, fear of punishment is a value that we never get rid of. It's something built within each one of us from the moment we're born, and we never outlive it. Fear of punishment. And this is not necessarily physical punishment that we're afraid of. In most cases, we're more seriously afraid of ego punishment. And we'll do almost anything to avoid punishment. We'll even change our values to avoid punishment. New heroes are very much a part of the process of creating new values. An illustration. A while back, I was talking to the chief of police of a major metropolitan center. And I said to this police chief, "You must be having a terrible time trying to recruit policemen." And he laughed at me. He said, "What are you talking about? I'm having no problem at all. I've got more applicants than we know what to do with." I said, "What are you doing, getting dropouts?" He said, "No, college graduates." Oh, I said, "You have to be kidding." And he said, "No, I have more applicants who are highly educated and well-trained than I ever had." And I said, "Well, how do you explain this?" Now, this was a few years back. He said, "A television show." And I said, "What television show? Adam 12 or Dragnet or Ironside?" He said, "No." By the way, this show is no longer around. He said it was Mod Squad. Because here, the generation that watched Mod Squad were able to identify policeman heroes who dressed, talked, and acted like they did. Now, once they became policemen, they watched Adam 12. Heroes, as they develop within a society, change values. Heroes, as they develop within peer groups, change values. Now, again, endlessly, the "I don't want to have it happen to me" changes values. We are constantly deciding that we want protection from additional impacts. And as we decide we want that protection, new laws, and laws again are expressions of values, are created. You also change values by getting involved in a new peer group. And if this peer group that you're involved with is a success peer group, you are going to increment your own chances of success. And a change of ego identity. Now, you remember the story I told you about the under 20 salesman? Here is a man who changed an ego identity, and in the process of changing it, his entire value system was altered. If you're selling a product, a concept, or an idea to a person or a group whose values may conflict with yours, and remember, you always have to start out assuming that there will be some value conflicts, what are you going to do? You know what we're going to do. You're going to use questions so they can express their own values. And one other thing that's very important here to the professional persuader, you've got to learn to use their language. Any good salesman persuader is multilingual. If it's a businessman, you have to talk to him in a businessman's language. If he's a scientist, you have to understand a scientist's language. If he's a teacher or a preacher or whatever, it's your requirement, if you're going to persuade him, to be multilingual enough to talk to him in his own language. Values. They design what we are. They design the decisions we'll make. And out of these values, our lifestyle is created. Just the other night, I sat down with a very bright young black. And he asked me, "How can I sell as a black to whites? They'll resent me." And I said, "That's not true. If you will allow them to show off to you, they'll like you. This is also true of the young salesman who's selling to older people. If you'll allow them to show off to you, they will like you and they'll buy your product. And how do you allow them to show off? Let them do the talking. Let them express their values. And using those values, persuade them to make the decision you want them to make in terms of their value interests. Let me sum what we've been talking about this way. We who are professional persuaders apply psychology. That is the name of the profession we're in. We salesmen apply psychology. We understand how people think, react, work, operate. And out of that understanding, we have the capacity to provide them with those things that their own value judgments will allow them to have. We provide the satisfaction of values. That's what salesmen do. They don't sell to needs. They sell to wants and desires. And these wants and these desires are values.
As you finish listening to these messages, I hope you realize a truth. Our studies have proven that you must listen to a cassette message at least 6 times to get 62% retention of the training. So I hope you'll start that as a journey towards increasing your skill level by hearing each message at least 6 times. I so hope you've enjoyed listening to Doug. I know his ideas will add to your skill level, your effectiveness, your income, your happiness, and success. So good selling, and thank you for investing this time to be better.
This is the end of the program. For more information about Tom Hopkins seminars, books, audio, or video training materials, call Tom Hopkins International at 800-528-0446.